Thanks for joining us for Future Focus Now. We're excited about our partnership with HBCU Smart TV and HBCU iRadio beginning this week, Thursday, at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m., and then at 10:30. We're evolving and honored to be a part of the HBCU Smart TV family of programs. Tonight's guest, Harry L. Williams, who serves as president and CEO of the Thurgood Marshall Fund, TMCF, the nation's largest organization exclusively representing Black college community. Under his leadership as president and CEO, TMCF has focused on creating innovative partnerships and increasing organizational sustainability and advancing bipartisan advocacy. Under Williams, TMCF has experienced tremendous growth, exceeding previous fundraising records and receiving increased notoriety for the charitable organization founded in 1987. A prolific fundraiser, Williams secured investments of over $20 million and distributed over $13 million in student scholarships within his first term. At TMCF, William places a strong emphasis on creating bipartisan alliances. The organization has been at the forefront, leading on every significant national legislative victory for HBCUs, earning respect and trust from elected and appointed leaders on both sides of the aisles, in Congress to the White House. In 2017, he made history, becoming the first sitting university president to lead TMCF. As president of Delaware State University, Williams enjoyed a successful 8-year tenure, increasing student enrollment and forging new public-private multi-million-dollar partnerships, grants, and investments into the campus. He has received many awards and accolades for his career in higher education, and previously held senior positions at the University of North Carolina General Administration, Appalachian State University, and North Carolina A&T State University. Dr. Williams earned his bachelor's and master's degrees from Appalachian State University, a doctorate from East Tennessee State University, and is a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Most importantly, he's a family man. His wife is Dr. Robin S. Williams, and they are the proud parents of two grown sons, Austin and Gavin. Austin and his wife, Reagan, both graduated from Howard University, and Gavin is a current Howard University scholar, athlete, Future Focus. Welcome to the house. We're glad to have tonight Dr. Harry L. Williams. Dr. Williams, Harry, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you, Chancellor. That was a very, very nice introduction. I appreciate that. And when I got your email inviting me to be on your show, I didn't even hesitate. I just said, boom, I'm in. And I'm here with you tonight. So I'm excited about being on your program.
Man, I am glad to have you here. And thank you so much for individuals who are so accomplished and do all the things that you do. Man, I was surprised. I am honored. I am literally honored that you agreed to be on my show. And we're excited about having you here on Future Focus Now. Man, how are you? We began Future Focus trying to see where our guests, where they are. How are you?
Yeah, I tell you, I'm doing well. Thank you. In Washington, D.C., based here. And as you know, just like everybody else, we've been quarantined. And so, but we've been able to get back to work in our office. We're in phase two in terms of the reopening of the businesses here in Washington, D.C. And so we are about 20% staffed in Washington, but the remaining members of our team, they're still working remotely. But just thank God that we're here and we're working on behalf of the more than 47 publicly supported historically Black colleges and universities representing over 300,000 students. So we get up every day focused on that. So I'm excited about the work that we're doing currently here at TMCF.
Yeah, I mean, it's some incredible work, Harry, no doubt. How have you been doing personally? I mean, how's your health and how's the family? And you know, I like you, but your better half is, I like her better than that.
I tell you, I appreciate you asking that. And I told Robin that I was going to be on your show, and she just started laughing because she remembered those days when you guys were working together at North Carolina Central. And so all good positive vibes there. So yeah, everybody's doing well. Thank you. Both of my boys are doing well. I'm a proud grandfather, first grandbaby, little baby girl. And so she runs the house. She owns everything. She's in charge of everything. She's in charge of everybody. So that makes our life really, really fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun. My oldest son, Austin, his little daughter, Porter Ray.
Well, that's great. And that's wonderful. I think one of the really nice things about this pandemic has been an opportunity, I think, to really even bond even more with my children. And my daughter also has a one-year-old and a five-year-old. And Denise and I have had the opportunity to keep them from a couple times during the pandemic. And it's been really refreshing just to have them in the house and to be able to do those kinds of things and not think about, you know, all the many things that we are on our plate. I know many things are on your plate, but certainly on my plate as chancellor of a university. So thank you for being with us. And tonight, this is really an opportunity for us to have a conversation about a number of things, certainly the work that you do with the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. But it also is an opportunity for us to have a conversation about HBCUs. We know more so than ever before. We've been in the media lately. People have started paying attention to HBCUs, have started funding them. The philanthropy is changing, and we'll get into all of that because I think there are opportunities for us to do that. But first, I want to get into you in terms of the work that you do. I'm going to ask a question, and then I'm going to ask you to respond to something and then go back to the question.
Okay.
Follow me? I got you. All right. So you were a very popular HBCU president. And so I will ask you, as a very popular HBCU president, why did you take the job at Thurgood Marshall? And don't answer that yet.
Okay.
But I want you, and I'll help you because I think it's important, to tell our audience what it's like being an HBCU president.
Well, first of all, is I can't explain it other than it is the greatest opportunity in the world to serve as an HBCU president. It was my goal in life was to be a president of a historically Black college and university, and that's what I wanted to do. And what motivated me to move in that direction was when I had the privilege and the great opportunity to work at North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro, and I was the director of undergraduate admissions there. And it was there where it just hit me when I started working there. And while I was there, I was working on my doctorate, finishing up my doctorate. And I can't explain the personal satisfaction you get when you're in a community and you look around and everybody looks like you. And everybody who looks like you, they're doing positive things to make their lives better and to make their family lives better and to just do something that's very, very unique. And to be able to have that experience to engage those individuals at a whole different level, I just saw that as one of the amazing things to achieve in terms of your professional journey. And my goal was to, I want to lead an HBCU. And I knew it was going to be a lot of hard work in order to do that. But I was willing to make whatever sacrifice that was necessary to achieve that. And I was very fortunate at a very young age that you would consider in the age of presidencies. I was 45 when I became president at Delaware State. And I knew that, you know, my tenure there was not going to be a long tenure, you know, in terms of sometimes people go and they get into an institution and they stay 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 10, 20, 30, you know, and I knew that by being in this space that there were going to be other opportunities. So while I was in the space, I took full advantage of what we could do to make the lives of these students better and what can we do to improve the community in a better way and use the position that you're in to do that. And I was able to do that very in a very positive way. And so I was really, really thrilled to be in that seat. So to your question, as it relates to how do you feel and why, it's because you know you're giving something of yourself and you know that you're surrounded by excellence and quality. And those individuals represent an amazing opportunity to transform lives. We serve, as you know, on our campuses, the majority of our students, large percentage of our students will be the first in their families to go to college. And you know how great that feeling is when you bring along the whole entire family. I can only imagine your graduation ceremony when, you know, you have to decide on how many people you're going to get tickets to That's go right. to graduation. That's right. A big deal. That's a big deal on the HBCU campus to get to the graduation, because everybody's going to come and they're going to want to be a part of that. And so being a first generation college student myself, I knew the very powerful piece of that and what that can do for your community and what it can do for you as an individual is just so remarkable. So I said to myself, I want to be in a position to be able to provide these opportunities for these young people and to make sure that we have a system that is designed to make their transition a smooth transition. And as a leader like yourself, you're always thinking about, well, you know, how can I make things better? How can I constantly, it's continuous improvement. That's what you're thinking about. And while you're thinking about that, there's always something to do from that perspective. And so by balancing all of that, it really stimulates you and gets you moving in a very positive direction.
And it also takes you into spaces that are unique sometimes to African-Americans, but also the culture of African-Americans. And that's the whole notion of taking care of one another. You know, what you learn from your grandparents, you know, that family environment. I know most HBCUs talk about that. We talk about that here at Winston-Salem State University. And it's real. It's not manufactured. It's so much a part of that. Parents call you as if you their uncle or grandfather or whatever, and they talk to you like that.
Yep. And another thing is, you know, most of our schools are located in communities that are heavily African American specifically. And so the presence of an academic institution in your community, it gives a great deal of pride to that community, because that's my school over there. You know, that's something that is very special and unique. And so by being in a community, it lifts up the whole entire community in a way that is very, very powerful for the people attending the institution and the people who are on the outside of the institution looking in. And you have a beautiful campus there, and the work that you guys are doing in Winston and the work you're doing in East Winston, it's work that is needed and it's positive, uplifting work for the community. And that's the power of being in a HBCU, where you are really, really serving your community.
Yeah, and that makes it so very special. The students, when you look back on your presidency at Delaware State, what are one or two things that you miss about the HBCU experience? Because we often try to communicate it, we try to tell people what it's like, but you have to experience it in order to appreciate it.
Yeah, I tell you, the one thing, if I said I missed something, you might think I'm a little bit cuckoo, but I actually miss living on campus. At Delaware State, we had they have a president's house on campus, and the house is right across the street from the largest residence hall on campus. And so you get to see all the students, and you really get to be in the moment, to be in the culture. So you can't hide. You really can't hide. And so they know when you're coming. They know when you're there. You know, and fortunate as you did the introduction, had two boys when they were on the college campus, and they grew up there. And for them to be able to grow up on a college campus every single day, it's just something that's also very special and unique, because every single day when they walk on that campus, they are surrounded by quality and excellence. And that's being ingrained in them daily. And as Black quality and excellence in a positive way, and looking to the students. Both of my boys took classes on campus. They did everything on campus. So that type of community is something that is really, really, really unique on our campuses in terms of that experience of really embracing it. Like when we would have a basketball game, at the end of the basketball game, instead of getting to my car, I would just walk home. You know, walk home with all the students, you know, so just being in that space is pretty special.
Right. And is there anything like an HBCU homecoming or even an HBCU graduation?
Well, my first homecoming was at first HBCU was at A&T, and it was there when I really saw the pride in the community. And I would see all these people. I saw these people wearing A&T gear, and they didn't even graduate from the school. Some of them didn't even go to school at all. And they were pumping it. It's our homecoming.
They're from the community. They're from the community, right, Eric?
I mean, they had everything. I said, "Wow, this is huge!" And everybody was excited about it. And the parade, and the band, and everything, and people coming back and just hanging out. I mean, thousands and thousands of people coming from all over. It's just something that I'd never seen before, and it's totally, totally unique. They also have a incredible homecoming here in D.C. with Howard. Howard's got this, you know, they block off the whole street. I mean, it's a big, big event. So to your point, it is a big, big deal, a homecoming. It's our largest crowd, though. I don't know. I'm sure it's the largest crowd. You sell out your Bowman Gray Stadium. I'm sure you have standing room only there at your stadium during homecoming. But it's usually the biggest crowd, the biggest a gathering of people trying to get on the campus. And you're like, man, why don't you do this at every football game?
That's right. Instead of just that one. Yeah, we have the crowds that comes to the football game, but the major crowd, Harry, is the tailgating. And that is far as the eye can see, tailgaters, and it is an incredible experience. You mentioned homecoming and the parade. One of the things I started when I first got to Winston-Salem State University, and I got this from President Obama when I saw he and Michelle was walking down the street. So Denise and I actually walked the parade. Oh, cool. We get out of the car, walk along the side, talk to the folks, you know, who are watching the parade. Right. It's really, really great. The community, folks love it. Yeah. So you have to. I mean, one of the things that's unique, I think, about being a president at an HBCU is you do become part of the community, part of the fabric. Right. Right. The makeup of that community, and people see you like that.
Well, the one thing I like about your leadership style, and I think it's important for presidents to have, you know, to be approachable, you know, and for people to feel comfortable in coming up and talking to you. You may not give them what they want, but you are approachable. And by you doing that little small gesture of getting out of your car and walking in the homecoming parade, that meant so much to so many people because they say, oh, damn, that's the chancellor. That's the leader there of the institution. And I'm sure other chancellors probably sat in that car and just rolled down the street, waving a hand and kind of creating that mystique about the position. And I think by creating an opportunity for people to be able to engage you, I hear people talking about you, Chancellor. I hear students talking about you, how they can get in touch with you and how you respond to them. And those are the things I think is important about this position, even though you have so many different responsibilities, but you're always thinking about the student. You're always thinking about how can I make it better for the student? What can I do so that they hear from me? Because they want to hear from you. And when they feel and hear your voice, it changes everything. So I commend you for that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. And you've taken that experience and you've extended it to the work that you're doing now. So I started off this segment saying that you were a very popular HBCU president. So you leave there. How did you happen to get to Thurgood Marshall?
I tell you, at Thurgood Marshall, as you know, the organization has been around for 33 years. And actually, I was sitting on the board of directors at Thurgood Marshall as one of the directors. And the president of the organization, Johnny Taylor, a very, very strong, very, very committed leader, announced that he was leaving. And we had some conversations, and I had just finished. I was I had given myself this time limit. You know, I didn't, you know, I said, I think, you know, I don't care how great you are as a leader, And if you're doing really well, my philosophy, you probably won't leave when you're on top versus when they want you to push you out. So we were doing really well as an institution. Our enrollment was looking good. We had put in place a succession plan where we had worked very, very, very collaboratively because we wanted the transition from me as president to the next president to be a smooth transition because we want to continue to build on that. And we were able to work very closely with our board, and we executed on a transition plan. And I knew that my clock was gonna run out. And so this opportunity presented itself, and it was unique because currently right now, instead of working with just one campus, I get to work with 47 campuses. So it expands the footprint, and it allowed me to be able to do what I love really, really well, is working with people and connecting people and bringing people together to do it on a national level. And so this opportunity was an opportunity that I decided to go for, and went through a very intense interview process, and fortunately ended up as being the president. And it's been an incredible journey, because now the previous two presidents, they were corporate executives. One was a lawyer and the other one was a major business leader. And so I'm the first actual sitting president to serve in this role. And so that gives it a whole different lens, because I know exactly, you know, what presidents are going through, what you're thinking about. And so when I'm meeting with corporate leaders, especially CEOs, I can give them firsthand knowledge about the life of a college president, the life on a college campus, because I've lived that. And that has come in handy with this current role. And so I'm enjoying my time as a president here. You know, it's an honor to get up every single day and know that you're in an organization that is named after one of the greatest Supreme Court leaders to ever live on this planet. And it's an honor to know that Thurgood Marshall himself personally engaged in the naming of this organization. Our founder, you know, Dr. Joris Payne, actually went and met with the justice, and went into his office and asked if he would be willing to lend his name to this organization. And without any hesitation, Supreme Court Justice Marshall said, I would be happy to lend my name and give the organization the rights and the privileges to use my name to raise funds. And because he was a two-time HBCU graduate number one in his class at Lincoln and PA, and then he went on and graduated top of his class at Howard Law. And, you know, the legacy of Thurgood Marshall, the man, you know, the legacy of what he has left behind, this is what this organization represents. Thurgood Marshall was a clear champion for social justice, a champion for equality, and a champion for education. And you think about those three major pillars, and to be in an organization that just blows that up every day in terms of his legacy and what it represents is very, very powerful to be in an organization like this. And so we've been very fortunate. You know, I tell students, your name is very, very important. If students are listening tonight, your name is all you got, you know? And so Thurgood Marshall, you can say his name anywhere in the world and it's going to be recognized, especially in the legal community. You know, I mean, there's not a legal law office in the country I can't gain access to by just saying that I'm the president of the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. Automatically, people literally will stand up because of what he stood for and are willing to support an organization that his name is attached to. So I can't emphasize that enough in terms of the importance of this organization and what it's been able to do over the last 33 years, where we've been able to raise close to $400 million for HBCU students, and unapologetically supporting the Black community and being very clear on that. And by just having him his name as that key component of this opening the door for so many people, because his legacy is extended in this organization, because a new generation of students are getting to know Thurgood Marshall through the work that what we're doing here at the Fund.
I mean, that was powerful. I mean, thanks for sharing that. I think our audience and everyone needed to hear that. That has been a foundation for you in terms of the work that you did at Delaware State, but the work that you're doing now at Thurgood Marshall, from me personally, has been some of the best work that I've seen. The way in which you have, one, transformed in many ways the organization and the minds of so many people in corporate America, so many people in the political arena. You have almost introduced HBCUs to folks that didn't know about us, and now they know about us, and now they appreciate us. I am curious, as when you thought about going into this role, did you have some idea or some plan about where you wanted to take the organization? I know you served on the board, so by serving on the board, right, you certainly had a perspective of, right, of where the organization was. Right. But right, in your mind, you know, superimposing onto to that your experience as an HBCU leader, I'm curious as to maybe one or two things that you said, I know I have to do this in order to take us in this direction, because I'm going to get into some of the things that you're doing currently that are, quite frankly, incredible.
Yeah, so that's a good question. And so the answer to that question is that, you know, I had a clear understanding of the mission of the organization, and the focus of the organization centers around African-American student success and promoting excellence for students to create opportunities to gain amazing internships and amazing corporations in this country, Fortune 500 companies. And so what we did, we wanted to be clear. We went through, as you know, when you come in as a new president, you always go through a visioning session in terms of what can we be and what will be our focus. And I did that, took the first year to kind of get a good sense of what the organization was about. Because I was on the board, I had a clear understanding of that. But when it transitioned into the presidency, you know, now you gotta represent a vision. You gotta represent something that the organization is going to live by. So the three major core areas that I said we were gonna focus on, and we were very clear on this, and the organization was already doing this, but I wanted to magnify that even more. And the number one, you know, the foundation of the organization is on scholarships. So, you know, making sure that we have the scholarships for our campuses and our students. That's the rock bottom foundation of the organization. The next important pillar outside of scholarships was programs, and programs specifically focused on talent, African American talent. And what I mean by that, and what I did learn as president of Delaware State, and I learned even more when I was on the board, that corporate America, they are looking for African-American talent. And so what we have been doing here at TMCF, Dr. Payne and a team prior before me had created this award-winning leadership conference. And you've been to the conference, been doing it this year, we're celebrating 20 years of this conference. And this conference focused clearly on our HBCU talent. Every year we bring in anywhere from 400 to 500 students from all of our campus to Washington, D.C. for a week. And this is a year-long process. Students right now are getting their letters indicating they've been selected as a TMCF scholar so they can come to this camp, this conference, and then they get to interview for major jobs, major internships with major corporations. And so what we wanted to do was to take the foundation of that and take that and just make that even bigger from that standpoint, because I felt because the interest for diversity, you name a corporation, they've hired a diversity and inclusion person. Right. You hear that, right? Don't you hear that all the time? Diversity and inclusion, and typically they're in HR because companies are looking for talent. And so I said we're gonna focus our energy on continuing to partner with our schools to help identify the best and the brightest So these companies, when they get exposed to our students, that they will see the talent that we have on our campus. So that was the second one. And the third major component is advocacy. And you know yourself, we ask the president to come to Washington, D.C. every year. And we are very clear that we are a bipartisan organization. And when you're bipartisan, you don't pick a side because you never know who's going to be in the White House, who's going to be in charge. So therefore, you got to be very clear. So everybody's got to get an education. Republicans, Democrats, independents, you all need an education. So therefore, the funding, when we go and meet with members on both sides of the House, we have a consistent message in terms of who we're advocating for. And we made that as a pillar of the foundation of the organization. And we've been able to scale that. And it's been very, very positive and it's been well received. And right now we are seeing, it's like an explosion of corporations wanting to be a part of something that's happening at TMCF because of what's happening real time right now. And a lot of this you can attribute to the social unrest that's taking place in our country.
Sure.
And more specifically, it blew up with George Floyd when unfortunately the young man was killed by that police officer. It did something to the soul of America, and it did something that impacted people thinking about race in this country. And so what we have experienced at TMCF, and I think you mentioned it, it's like a rebirth of bringing people to the forefront of getting a clear picture of HBCUs and their value. We know they've always been valuable, but now there's a light that's being shined on our institutions in a way that people want to learn more about them.
And I do think that it is a moment in time. It's a moment in time that we need to take advantage of. And I have no doubt that the work that you're doing at Thurgood Marshall, that you are in a position to really take advantage of that. We've seen sort of, the light being shined on HBCUs. We've seen athletes now talking about maybe even coming to an HBCU.
Yep.
The philanthropy is really unreal in terms of individuals wanting to provide support to HBCUs. And I know that you are having those kinds of discussions as well. I am curious in terms of, as we look at the advocacy, as we look at what's happening with HBCUs and particularly around corporate America, what is your selling point? I know you talked about talent, but when we talk about and we think about these major organizations, it's important to have talent from an employee standpoint, but also it's important to have talent at the highest level. And I think the next wave for us will be getting people in positions of power at these corporations and at these institutions. It's one thing, to all of a sudden give a major gift to a college. And, and if there's anybody out there listening, Winston-Salem State University could also use a major gift. But it's another thing to get folks involved throughout the organization. Talk a little bit about your work and how you want to tackle that whole issue.
Well, I tell you what, one of the things that in talking to executives, I give you a clear example. You can go to our website and see this. We just signed a major scholarship, $10 million scholarship deal with a corporation called Medtronic. And Medtronic is a medical device company that is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They have over 90,000 employees, and they produce pacemakers, they insulin pumps, and they're looking for talent. And actually, it's based in Minneapolis, and it's where George Floyd unfortunately was killed. And so we started engaging their leadership team. And they said to us, "Hey, we want to do something unique." And I said, "Well, you want to do something unique? You have an opportunity to partner with an organization, and you will be the first. You will be the first medical device company, and it is by far it is the number one medical device company in the world. And so they are accustomed to being affiliated with the best." And so, and I said that if you want to be affiliated with the best, you need to get to know our students at HBCUs. And we had a Zoom meeting just like this, where we made a presentation to the CEO of the company and his C-suite, you know, senior leaders there at the company. And what we said to them, if you want to get to know our institutions, get to know our students, you can invest in a major scholarship program. And they did. And when they announced it worldwide, I got so many emails, so many letters from people who were affiliated with that company saying that they are proud of their company for making this step. And so your students will be able to benefit from the scholarship program that we're going to start in January. And they will also have an opportunity, and they're looking for students in the different disciplines, physical therapy. They're going to look for students with a wide variety of science background, STEM background. And the scholarships are going to be up to, I think it's like $8,500. It's for starting your freshman year. And again, they want to build relationships with the institution. So if they get this scholarship, this is going to allow them to get to know the company better. Now, what I can tell you is that if the CEO, just like you're the CEO of your institution, if the CEO is engaged with it, it's going to happen.
Right.
It's going to happen. So all of the major announcements, major engagements that we have with starting with Apple, started with Boeing, all those partnerships started right there with the CEO. And that tells you about the company. It tells you about the culture of the company. We're now engaging other major Fortune 500 companies more and more companies. You know, typically in any given year, we usually bring in between 60 to 75 new partners to our gala, and we're here, and we usually have those numbers locked in by the end of August. We're now in the beginning of August, and this year we're up to close to 180 new corporate partners that say we want your students, we want the students attending the HBCU. So that's more and more. So we're announcing engagements that will allow people to get to know us better. So when they look at the roster, they're going to your website, they're looking at our campuses, they're looking at our students. So it's a great opportunity for us. So what we do at TMCF in our promotion of this, you know, we, as you read in the opening, we talk about the number of institutions that we have and the number of students, and that gives them an opportunity to say, hey, we can go in and not necessarily, you know, sometimes they think about the schools that may have the bigger name recognition. And what we say to them that, you know, it's not about a name recognition. We got quality at all institutions, size, type, doesn't matter. Because once you gain that, and that's where we take it. We said 47, not just one, 47 of our institutions have the talent on our campus to give these students this opportunity to do something that's pretty unique.
And more, and I want to get to a few other things before we run out of time. We talked about the spotlight shining on HBCUs, and there's a possibility that it could even shine brighter, because it's a possibility we could have a vice presidential candidate from HBCU.
Yep.
And what that would mean. A reporter called me yesterday and wanted to talk about that. But just talk a little bit about that. Your I think the work that you do on the Hill and the work that you do with your government relations team is just incredible. You talked a little bit about the whole notion of being bipartisan, and that's not easy. Right. That's not easy in a world today that's so divided politically.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us how you are able to stay in that bipartisan space?
Yeah, I tell you, thank you for that question, Chad. And before I get into it, I wanna tell a little story about you, Chad. You know, I'm telling you about that. See, you think you can leave Winston and you get into Washington, nobody's gonna pay attention to you. We had an opportunity. I'm gonna share it with the audience. It's a really appropriate story because it aligns with what we're talking about today. We every year we bring in our presidents, and a few years ago, I think it was a couple years ago, Senator Kamala Harris, who is a HBCU graduate, graduated from Howard, had just announced that she was running for the presidency. And we invited her in to come and meet with the presidents, and your chancellor took it and took his cell phone out and did a live interview with her and sent it back to campus. I said, Chancellor, you never let an opportunity slip by. And you say, hey, right. And you pushed me out of the way. I was up there interviewing. No, but, you know, I think it's important to be clear when you are engaging both sides of the House and letting them know that, you know, we all need education, regardless of our political affiliation. And the dollars that we are asking for are public funds that taxpayers are responsible for. And the leaders who are there in Washington have a responsibility to make sure that those funds are being used appropriately and used wisely. And so we have every right to be advocating for our institutions. And the reason why we do it is because what we know historically that African-American institutions have been underfunded. And this is not a fake point. This is a reality. And so what we do, we make the case to let our members know that these institutions have been around for over 150 years and that they play a critical role in the economic development of the communities that they serve. And they play a critical role in providing the quality of education for a group of individuals. 73% of our students that attend our institutions are eligible for the Pell Grant. And when you are eligible for the Pell Grant, it's the most needy entitlement program that's available. That means that you have financial challenges to pay for your education. And so part of that financial, it doesn't mean you're not smart, it's just you have financial challenges. And so the Pell Grant assists you in being able to continue your education, and we want that. So when you have those challenges, we want to make sure that our students are getting what they need so they can persist towards graduation. Because what I can say without a doubt, if we didn't have HBCUs, there would be no Black middle class today in this country. HBCUs created the Black middle class. And so therefore, if we didn't have them, we would have to make them because there's a need here that we're serving. We're serving this country. And what we do know, the more people we have in the middle class, the better and the stronger this country will be. So creating those opportunities to get people in that class, this educational journey will help. And so therefore, if you go back and you look at what bill passed this session, the only bill, one of not that many, bills was a bipartisan package that the Futures Act. It was a law that we advocated for that would annually give HBCUs $285 million annually through a Title III program that we have to go back and beg for every year. Now we have it in the law. We don't have to go, Chancellor, you don't have to go back and ask your senator or your representative to support this bill. Now, every year it's a 10-year process. At the end of the 10th year, it will be automatically renewed. And those dollars are entitlement dollars that will go to our campus and it will serve our institutions. Just like when we just passed the recent CARES Act, that was another major piece of legislation. We received over $1 billion, close to $1 billion for our schools, unheard of. Unheard of. You can go back and look through the Congress, and we've never had, first of all, we've never had a major law. Second, we've never had this type of funding. You know, we're in Washington right now, our team, we're right up on the Hill working with members of Congress because we're working on this next stimulus bill. And in this stimulus bill, There is the Republican Senate, they have put in there a set aside that we've asked for HBCUs, $2.9 billion. The House also put into their bill a set aside. We have never had in the Senate here in Washington is being run by the Republicans. So we got a Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, to agree to put this legislation as a priority. And then we have on the House side, Nancy Pelosi and her team, because we have them supporting it. Representative Adams has been very, very supportive of this initiative. But it's that type of bipartisan support that is necessary for our schools to receive the funding that we need, in addition to the funding that's going to come to higher ed all together. So our efforts, we have been pushing, but you know, we do it in a way that's a gentle push. Sure. And we do it in a way that's a reminder of the history of where these institutions have come from and what they are doing right now for this country. And they are listening, which we are very grateful for.
And we're very grateful. I mean, really kudos to your team. Kudos to Thurgood Marshall for that work. You talked about the Futures Act. You also talk about the CARES Act. I mean, those are two powerful kinds of things that have happened that we've never seen anything like it before. So really hats off to all the hard work and all the coalitions that you have built and you put together, because it just wasn't Thurgood Marshall. It was a number of organizations that came together to make this happen. And you were right in the midst of that. You talked about how these institutions are so very important in terms of economic development. You know, at Winston-Salem State University, economic mobility, I mean, that's kind of our mantra, and that's right. What we do. And because of that, you quickly identified us as a place in which you wanted to put one of the first centers for advancing opportunities. I got you on the show. Tell the audience about that.
Well, I tell you, we didn't give you anything. You earned it. It was a very competitive process where we identified institutions that's in the HBCU community. We were working with a partner at the Koch Foundation, and we were able to secure about $3 million to support an economic development initiative. And because of your center there, CSAM, which is your center for economic development there, and creating an opportunity for a community like East Winston, and look at that community and how you can create jobs and create entrepreneurship opportunities for people in that community. And so the goal here for that is to allow the talent that's on our campus, the faculty talent that we have on our campus, to be able to showcase what you are engaging in, what you're doing, and using research that our faculty members are doing to help inform the public on the opportunities that exist in our community, and more specifically on our campuses. And so we've been able to partner with you on that, which has been a bright spot. Your leader there, Dr. Craig Richardson, has done an incredible job of really showcasing what's happening in Winston. And so we're very, very proud of that. Actually, we just hit the button just the other day, tell Craig to send him several other $100,000. So it's coming to your way, the work that's taking place there. So it's all positive. And we would not have said yes to you if you didn't demonstrate very clearly the right skill set from your faculty and from your students to show that there's going to be a major return on this type of investment. And I can tell you without a doubt, all of our partners are very proud of the work that you're doing there at Winston-Salem State. So we are proud to partner with you and to showcase the talent that you have there on your campus.
Oh, we really appreciate that. And I can announce to you tonight that when you have a center like that and you're building capacity, it puts you in position to get additional dollars. And we were awarded $1 million from the UNC Policy Collaborative that professors in the center will be doing research to look at the impact of COVID-19 on the poor and the disabled in our communities.
Wow. Congratulations. That's again, it's a clear example of what we wanted to see, that type of investment. And you just proved it there with that announcement here tonight. And so congratulations on that. You got a press release out on that tomorrow. When are you going to hit the...
we'll get it out.
Just announced it here. So that's good stuff.
We'll get it out. I wanted to not leave this discussion in terms of HBCUs without not only giving a shout out to you, but giving a shout out to our partners in this space. Could you say a little bit about, you know, the other organizations, the other groups that have come together to really support HBCUs? And I want to ask you something. As we've been having this discussion, I've been thinking about, you know, Thurgood Marshall and all the amazing things that you have done to position this organization for success. This is a relatively young organization, Harry. We're talking 33 years, but now it's a name brand. People know, Thurgood Marshall, and our students benefit from that. How in a short period of time did it create and grow into this kind of perspective in the minds of so many people?
You know, it's amazing that you asked that question, because I've seen it. I've seen it over the years to that it's developed into a major player in this space. The oldest and the most recognizable name in this space is UNCF, United Negro College Fund. We remember Lou Rawls. Don't remember Lou Rawls?
Yep, that's singing. Right. That's right.
Mine is a terrible thing. You know, the loss of all those telethons that he used to have. And so the United Negro College Fund has been around for 75 years and led by Michael Lomax, Dr. Michael Lomax, a former college president at Dillard. And he has done an incredible job of positioning that organization where they represent the private HBCUs. And the private HBCUs, about 37 of those, close to 40,000 students. And so they have done that, and they've done it really well. And one of the first things that I wanted to do was to bring and to show that we work together. And so Michael, my very first visit, never forget it, when I was in New York, in D.C., my very first guest was Michael Lomax. He came over to my office and he said, I want to sit down with you. I want to talk about how we can partner together. Because what we recognize is that when we talk about HBCUs, the general public, they don't have a distinction. They don't say, hey, that's a UNCF school or that's a TMCF school. They say that's an HBCU. So what we want people to understand is that we're all working together. So we were able to started that process, and it has yielded the results that you're hearing here. So when we go in, like we just sent a letter, UNCF and NAFIO, Leslie Basserville. NAFIO has been around just as long as UNCF, and that organization is a national advocacy organization that's based out of Washington, D.C., and they represent all of the HBCUs in Washington, D.C. So we've all come together. So we just sent a joint letter to the head of the Senate committee that is looking at this funding that's getting ready to come our way. And there's been some discussion up here on the Hill, and we're trying to stop that some states are looking at what the federal government is doing for some of our institutions. And they're saying, hey, if the federal government is giving you extra funds, we can allocate our state dollars to somewhere else and not give you the state dollars that you deserve because you're getting these extra funds from the federal government. So what we are doing, we're advocating, we're saying, no, our state institutions, they need the state dollars and they need the federal dollars. So do not touch those dollars, and encouraging the state leadership not to go down that path. But we're doing it. We sent that out in a joint statement. We did it just today, matter of fact. And so we're hoping that that's going to yield something, because some of these governors are having those conversations, because as you just referenced, with the CARES Act, that you got a lot of funding with that. But what we said to members of Congress, those dollars, even though they may be new dollars coming into the institutions, our campuses had to make that, those dollars made the campus whole. It didn't give you an advantage, because when our students had to transition in March, campuses also had encumbered their dollars for housing and meals. They had already encumbered those dollars. Then you had to send them right back out in a form of a refund. So those are dollars that left the campus. And what we said, in some cases, some of our campuses sent $8, $10, $15 million out. So you needed those dollars to operate the institution. So that's why we push to give you the flexibility so that you can have those extra funds. And that's what we're doing now in this second bill, because we're saying, even though you got X millions of dollars, that's still not enough, because you're still playing catch up. You know, I know you have an endowment there, but you don't have an endowment that's $3 billion, you know, like, you know, some other institutions that can use their endowment to keep them afloat. Our campuses do not have that luxury to do that from that standpoint. So that's why it's important to get the cash coming into to the organization.
And it's been great, man. We're up against the hour. I tried to get in as much as I could. I got in a lot, but I didn't get in at all. I got to have you come back. I mean, you got to come back at another time.
Thank you, Chancellor.
And have a conversation. But I can't let you get out of here without telling you that you have my son working for you.
Oh, really?
You have Kyle Brown, who was my SGA president a few years ago.
Yes.
He works for you, and he's actually doing some work for me a little bit on the side now. And I told him that you were going to be on, and he said that's my guy. And I said, Kyle, I thought I was your guy. I mean, but now you're his guy.
Job. He's in our talent team. He's doing a great job. So yeah. That's your son. That's your Winston-Salem State son.
That's my Winston-Salem State son.
He's a good guy. He's a really good guy.
Yeah. Harry, thank you so much for being a part of Future Focus Now. You've been a great, wonderful guest. I know that we'll see each other real soon. Man, continue the great work. Continue the great promotion of HBCUs. You're a bright and shining star. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Chancellor. I appreciate your kind remarks, and thank you for inviting me and invite me back. I'll be happy to come back. You're doing great things there in Winston. Have a great opening fall session. I know it's going to be wonderful. I know the students are going to love seeing you walking around campus. I love your hat, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it's a red hat, Winston-Salem State University red.
There you go. You got to promote.
Good night. Everybody, join us next week for another episode of Future Focus Now. Good night, everybody.